Arjuna uvacha, jayasi chet karmanaste, mathabudhir janardana, tatkin karmani ghore imam, niyojayasi keshava. Arjuna said, O Janardhan, O Keshava, why do you urge me to engage in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work? Vyamashaneva vakyena buddhim mohaya shiva me tadekam vadanishchitya yena shreyoham apnuyam. My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively what is most beneficial for me. These verses we are reading from this evening are from chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, which is entitled Karma Yoga. In the second chapter of Gita, Krishna has very definitively, in a most scientific and philosophical manner, explained what is truth. He explains that truth is to understand that reality is that we are eternally spiritual. And the soul, which is the source of all life, is different than this material covering called the body that we are temporarily residing. The body is subject to birth, old age, disease, and death. But the soul is above, it is beyond, it is transcendental to all these material attributes. Krishna also explains that this mind is also a material element. It is a temporary covering to the soul. The mind, which sometimes feels great elation, happiness, and sometimes is terribly depressed. Sometimes it is frustrated, sometimes it rejoices. Sometimes it is very clear and sure of itself, and sometimes it is totally confused and bewildered. The mind, Arjuna says, is more difficult to control than the wind. But somehow or other, due to ahankar, false ego, the eternal soul is identifying itself with this mind and body. The ahankar is the subtle most material element. It is that fine line junction between material and spiritual consciousness. Krishna explains that the miseries of the body and the miseries of the mind will come and go, as will the happiness and joys, as will health and disease, as will life and death. But the soul remains the same. It is above, it is beyond, it is of a different nature. It is Satchit Ananda. It is eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And the wise who know this, they are transcendental to the flickering pleasures and pains and anxieties of this world. Even after Krishna explained all of these principles to Arjuna in the second chapter, Arjuna begins third chapter by explaining that his intelligence is bewildered He's confused. He's in terrible anxiety. How is this? It is the nature of this world. The nature of this world is full of complications and perplexities. Krishna explains in the Gita that this material existence, its nature is like a banyan tree. If you have ever seen a banyan tree that is very old, it has many trunks. In the Calcutta Botanical Gardens, there is one of the largest banyan trees in the world. It just stretches out mass distance. And nobody could tell which is the original trunk. The branches go down, and then they form a big trunk, and then they go up and form another tree. It looks like a whole forest of trees. But in fact, it's only one tree. But nobody could understand which is growing up and which has grown down. Where is it the beginning? Where is the end? Krishna explains that this material nature is like this banyan tree. No one can understand it. It's so confusing. It's so complicated. It's just a bewildering condition, material life. And how the laws of karma are working, they are so intricate and so complete. Why good things happen to bad people? Why bad things happen to good people? Why we are in the conditions we are from time to time? It is practically unfathomable. And even the greatest, most wise men who have heard from the Lord directly, still, the circumstances of this world make them confused and bewildered, and sometimes ready to just give up faith and give up hope. What to do, what not to do, who to follow, who not to follow, what is right, what is wrong, and why is all this happening? What is the meaning of life? We should not be surprised, because it is the nature of material existence. Krishna explains, everything is temporary, everything is mutable, and everything is based on the principle of duality. No matter who we are, no matter what we do, there will be pleasure and pain. There will be happiness and distress. There will be health and disease. There will be honor and dishonor. There will be success and failure. And in due course of time, we must see the face of both sides of these dualities. In fact, our Guru Maharaj used to say that material existence, which is built upon the principle of duality, it is like two sides of the same coin. I do not know exactly what phrase you use in India, but in the West we say heads and tails. Do you say like that? One side of the coin is heads, the other is tails. Huh? Now, gamblers in the West, sometimes they don't know what else to do with their money. If they're in Las Vegas, they have all kinds of elaborate facilities for having this trying to just escape from their boredom by just worrying about whether they're going to win or lose their money. Huh? Why do they do this? Because they're so just bored with life, that they have to find some excitement rather than sitting on the rooftop of the Sea Palace Hotel and hearing about Krishna. They have to go to these crazy places just to infatuate their minds with something that makes them forget the loneliness and misery of life. But sometimes these interesting creatures, when they're not in such a place like that and they need something to do, they'll bet tens and thousands of dollars on whether it's going to be heads or tails. Huh? And I know people who have spent years perfecting how to make the coin come exactly the way they want it. Huh? It's a fine art amongst cheaters. But anyways, every coin has a head and a tail, and they're considered opposites. In the same way, you cannot have heads without tails. If you take the coin, you take heads and tails. Huh? If you don't want heads, you can't have tails either. Once you pick up the coin, they're both there. Material existence is like that. You want the happiness, you pick up the coin, the stress is on the other side, and one of these days the coin's going to turn. You want the pleasures of life, you have to accept the pains along with it. You want to enjoy success, failure will come. Victory, sweet victory. But someday you will have to face bitter defeat, honor and dishonor. If you do not want to suffer, you have to transcend both. Krishna says in Gita, Tam statiksha svabharata, that you have to tolerate happiness as well as distress. You have to tolerate pleasure as well as pain on the physical level if you want freedom from death, from suffering. But as long as we are immersed in this complexity, like a spider web, a spider has constructed this web in such a amazingly scientifically efficient form that when the fly enters the web, the web actually looks like a very comfortable place. Have you ever seen a nice spider web? Amazing design. Wonderful balance. The architectural balancing is amazing. As good as the Taj Mahal in Agra. You've seen the Taj Mahal? They have those two towers that make a nice balance and then one tower in the middle. Well, spider web, there's all these beautiful squares and circles, and they're all just in perfect harmony with one another. And it was created by the tiny little brain of a spider. And they didn't have to go all the way to the Rajasthani deserts and hire millions of slaves to bring marble to their web. Nobody knows where. It just comes right out of their mouth. Huh? They're really amazing construction masters for their own purpose. And they make the web to look like such a wonderful, comfortable place to just, for any fly to just, very nice. I've been flying all day. Let me rest in this nice, soft web. And they rest. And they're very happy. But then when they decide time to go, they can't go anywhere. Now, if they would just sit there and be patient and call for help, someone could come and bring them out. But no, they try to get out on their own. What happens? The more they try, the more they get wound up. And an enthusiastic fly that's really struggling, I am the master of my destiny. By my power and will, I'm going to get out of this problem. And what happens in the end? You don't even see it anymore. You look in the, and you just see this, like a little ball of cotton moving like this. They're completely, the more you try to get out of this material existence, the more you become entangled, enwrapped in bondage. Not maybe. It's the nature of material life. And you'll never change material nature. And you'll never fully understand material nature. But Krishna gives us the way to be liberated from material nature. And that is what Bhagavad Gita is. The circumstances and conditions that come into our life oftentimes are so perplexing. At that time, like Arjuna, we must humble ourselves. We must simply admit our frailties. If Arjuna was proud, Krishna would have never spoken one word to him. In fact, at the beginning of Gita, Arjuna wanted to explain to Krishna how intelligent he was and why he would not fight. And Krishna did not speak one word. He just sat and listened and waited. Waited till Arjuna was confused, perplexed, did not know what to do, did not know what not to do. And at that time, Krishna spoke. Similarly, Sarva Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Riddeshe Arjuna Tishtati Brahmayan Sarva Bhutana Yantra Rubadani Mayaya. Krishna is within our heart. And as long as we think we know what is right and what is wrong, and we know what is the goal of life and what we're trying to accomplish, then Krishna within our heart remains silent, simply waiting. He knows that ultimately all of our so-called plans will end in frustration, either this life or some future life. And ultimately we all turn to Krishna like Arjuna. But why waste time? Why not right now? Asochananvasochastvam pragyavadam shabashas. Shishyaste ham sarimam tvam papanam karpanya doso pahatha svabhava. Arjuna said to Krishna, you are my guru. Please instruct me. I am confused about my duty. I do not know. I've lost all composure because of weakness. But the fact is, Arjuna was suffering worse than he ever suffered in his entire life. When Draupadi was put in front of him and about to be stripped naked, ultimately Krishna saved her. When they were banished to the forest for so many long years, when people were humiliating them and trying to murder them, he was never so depressed. Nowhere in all these terrible situations of persecution by the Kurus does it show Arjuna crying, not able to hold his bow. But when he was standing on that battlefield and he saw such a bewildering thing that his friends and his relatives on both sides, they've come to kill each other. And he thought he knew exactly what to do. But by his own mind, he came in more distress than he had ever experienced in his life. He was suffering terribly. There were tears flowing from his eyes. His mouth was totally parched dry. His limbs were trembling. His hairs were standing on end. His Gandiva bow fell from his hands. Here was the greatest, most powerful warrior in all the world, and he was reduced to a helpless, like a baby, just crying for help. That was the most auspicious junction of his life, because it was through that crisis that he opened his heart and ears to truly hear the word of Krishna. Human life is not meant to try to make a nice situation for ourselves and our families. Because ultimately, how long could we maintain such nice arrangements? Eventually you're going to die, and everyone's going to die, and everything you own is going to become ruins. And how much time? The soul is eternal. For the eternal soul, even if it lasts one or two or three generations, It's like one click of the finger in the presence of eternity. What is it? This body, which we are so carefully trying to maintain, make the best use of a bad bargain. We have a material body now that we're living in. We have to keep it healthy as far as possible. But ultimately, in a few years, no matter what we do, we're going to be finished. Just not long ago, a couple decades back, there was a man who was considered the healthiest man on earth. Recently, I was in Urlikanchan. You know, there's a naturopathic institute. And they had all these books by this man. He's considered, even to this day, the authority on good health. So I was sitting there reading, and it explains a little of his life story. This man, when he was early in his 20s, he was dying of cancer. Terrible pain. Just years and years of morbid suffering this poor soul was undergoing. And he went to so many doctors, and they just made things worse. Nothing could help. Then he just had some intuition that I'm going to cure myself through diet, through fasting, and through exercise. And he did. Completely cured himself. Not only did he cure himself, but he became such a specimen of health that medical practitioners and scientists would test his body, and they declared he was the healthiest man on earth. They'd never seen such... There was practically no mucus in his body. Everything was just operating precision. Huh? And he had such complete self-control. Anyways, his books were bestsellers. And you know how people in this world are. They're very bodily conscious. Their life and soul is to have a nice, healthy body. So he became very much famous. And he was giving tours where he would present lectures, answer questions, train people. He was traveling all around the Western world. People were flying him on jet planes here, there, and everywhere to speak. Thousands upon thousands of people would come into these auditoriums to hear him. How to become healthy, how to live long. He guaranteed that anyone who followed his way of his diet and exercise plan would live till 120 years old minimum. Guaranteed. Anyways, he was only about 40 years old. And one day, this healthiest man in the world, whose books to this day are bestsellers on how to live a long life, with him, he was just giving a lecture, and they just gave him a standing ovation. And he was walking out to his car, and there was some oil on the street, and his foot slipped on the oil, and he fell on the concrete, and he cracked his skull, and he died. Ah. I know people who've been eating sugar and ghee and jalebis and gulab jamuns all their life, and they're 80, 90 years old. Huh? This man died at 40. So what is the use of all his good health? At the least expected moment, whoosh, boom. Huh. Finished. This world is full of uncertainty. Samashita ye padapalava plava mahat padam punya yasho murari. It is explained that intelligent people don't make their goal in this world because there's danger at every step. I remember when I was a young boy, I started thinking spiritually because I was just watching things around. When I was a little boy, I used to just like to just watch what's happening. Huh? And everyone was praising the Rockefellers. Everyone wanted to be like the Rockefellers. They were the embodiments of wealth, power, prestige. Anyways, my father was reading the newspaper and he put it down, and I never liked newspapers, but I used to just see what's happening in this crazy world. So I, front page, Mr. Rockefeller was saying, the headline was, he'll never find a day of happiness again in his life. And I read the article, and it explained how his son was a college student, and he was working on his thesis. He was studying anthropology, cultural anthropology, and he was doing his thesis about the cannibals of New Guinea. And they ate him. The object of his study ate him. Even though he went with all kinds of people and there was some type of accident and they couldn't find him anywhere. And they realized. And he said, and his father said, with all of my fortune and all of my prestige, I will never find a day of happiness or peace again in my life because of my son's death. So I was thinking, it can happen to anybody at any time. And yet people are striving for such a flickering temporary status of happiness. This world, it is so bewildering. It is so confusing. And you cannot change it. Even if you have the best karma, Krishna says in Gita, the people who are so incredibly pious and religious, they can attain Brahmaloka. Where you could live for billions of years in royal luxury with all kinds of nice people. No pollution. No traffic jams. Brahmaloka is a wonderful place, materially. But Krishna says it's a place of misery. As far as Krishna is concerned, there's not much difference between Brahmaloka and Patalaloka. Patalaloka is where you're just burning in flames and you're being tortured for all your terrible karma. In Brahmaloka, you're just profusely enjoying the results of your good karma. Krishna says they're both places of misery. Because they're both places of birth and death, where everything is temporary. Those in Brahmaloka today may be in Patalaloka tomorrow, and those in Patalaloka today may be in Brahmaloka tomorrow. So who's actually in a better position? We don't even know. They don't even know. You cannot change material nature. Therefore, Krishna says, Mamu Petyatu Punarjanma Dukalayam Ashashvatam. This material world, he says, is Dukalayam Ashashvatam. Because everything is temporary, it's a place of suffering by nature. Don't make your goal here. Wise men take shelter of the great sadhus, the great devotees, who have the key to get them out of this world of birth and death. Our Guru Maharaj used to explain that Durga literally means in Sanskrit prison. This world is considered Durga. It is a prison. Guru Maharaj used to say, if you're in a prison, according to your influence, there's different gradations of jail cells you could live in. I don't know how it is in India. Probably the same. But if you can pay off the guards enough, you can get a jail cell with wall-to-wall carpeting, with refrigerator, telephone, television, radio, stereo, and room service. It's true. I know people who have been in such prison cells. They have told me. They say it's very nice. And other people are in solitary confinement, where there's just like a hole in the ground, and it's pitch dark, and they have to sit, and there's no toilet facilities. They just pass stool and urine, and they just have to wait for rats to come to eat it. Huh? And they don't even see the light of day for years at a time. And then there's all gradations in between. Anyways, a foolish person is striving to go from a lower class cell to a higher class cell. My Guru Prabhupada used to say that with the same energy, you could be making arrangements to get out. We're making so many elaborate arrangements, putting so much of our precious human energy into trying to improve our material life, which is ultimately a prison of birth and death. With the same amount of time and energy, we could be making arrangements to get out altogether, to be liberated. Liberation doesn't mean simply that we have to die and attain some higher planet. Liberation means in this life, you realize the eternal truth, the eternal nature of the soul and the loving relationship it has with God, and then you're transcendental, you're liberated even in this life. That is the goal of Gita. And after this life, Krishna says, you return to his eternal abode. But actually, even in this life, your consciousness has already returned to his eternal abode, which is present in your own heart. That is intelligence, according to Gita. To utilize our valuable time to make permanent solutions. Even great personalities cannot understand things. But if we simply humble ourselves before Krishna, in the end he reveals everything. Sometimes even devotees, some things come in their lives that they just cannot understand. But if we just maintain our faith and devotion, Krishna reveals the truth for everything in due course of time. There's a story in the Srimad Bhagavatam of Devaki. Devaki was such a pious, honest, and wonderful lady. And do you know, when she was in that prison cell of Kamsa, for no fault of her own, she got married to Vasudev, who was the most illustrious, respectable, and pious religious man. He was a pure devotee, as was Devaki. And they just had a nice wedding ceremony, and they were on their chariot coming back, and her beloved cousin brother, Kamsa, happened to be driving the chariot, because he had so much affection for Devaki. He wanted to show her how much he loved her. Love is so fickle in this material world, according to circumstances. Real love is unconditional, but material love is very conditional. I'll scratch your back, you scratch my back, but if you don't scratch me, I won't scratch you. And if you scratch me too hard, I'll scratch you even harder. This is love in the material world. Huh? Today, even in India, which is Bharatvarsha, the land of Dharma, we see so many families are battling each other in courts. Who's the proprietor of what? Anyways, Kamsa was like that. He was riding the chariot, driving to show love to his wonderful sister. And all of a sudden, nobody expected it. The nature of this world is at any moment something can happen to change everything. All of a sudden, this voice comes from the sky that says, "Kamsa, you are a fool." And me? I'm not a fool. Yes, you are a fool. Because the eighth son of Devaki will kill you, Harivo. Here he was, with tears of love in his eyes, bringing Devaki to her husband's kingdom, with feelings in his heart that I will not see her anymore, I love her so much. And the next second he grabbed her by the hair, drew his sword, and was about to cut her head from her trunk. Vasudeva was looking on with amazement. This is love? This is cousin, brother? What nonsense? He was trying to stop him. Ultimately, he had to promise, "I will give you all my children, but leave her alone." Kamsa said, "All right, under that condition, you give me all your children." Why would they have children under such circumstances? Vasudeva and Devaki were such devotees. They understood that Krishna was going to be their child. And he was going to be their eighth child. It was already announced. They knew it. God was going to be their eighth child. And they were devotees. And to carry out the will of God, to be a part of his mission, they were willing to do anything. So they had to have seven children before. And they knew that Kamsa was going to kill every one of them. And do you know how a mother becomes attached to a child after living within her womb for 9 months? And when that baby comes out, it's the most beautiful object of love in the whole universe for that mother. Mothers agree with that? I've never been a mother, at least not in this life. I don't know what I probably was before, but in this life But is that true? This is my speculation. And I have heard it. And I've read it in scriptures also, so it must be true. A mother, when she sees that baby, she just immediately falls in love with it. And every time Devaki saw her beautiful child, Kamsa came and murdered it right in front of her eyes. Why would she have another child? Because she knew that it is my service to the Lord. He's going to be the eighth. Even if I have to suffer seeing the murder of seven children in a row, which breaks my heart, for Krishna's sake, I'm willing to undergo that. This was the quality of her love. She never even complained. And six children were killed. And then Balaram appeared, but she never even got to see him. She was transferred from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini in Gokula. And then finally, after all those long years of living in prison and seeing all her children killed, when Krishna finally became her child, he told her on that very night, "Vasudev, Devaki, take me to Gokul and leave me there." She had to remain in prison, and Yashoda got to enjoy raising beautiful baby Krishna. But yet she never complained. She was doing her service with such love and such devotion. If this is what pleases my Lord, this is what I want. Whatever I have to undergo, my life is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. And through all this external suffering, she was enjoying the ultimate ecstasies internally. Anyways, about 12 years and 9 months later, Krishna came back to Mathura, and right in front, In the presence of Devaki and Vasudev, he climbed on the chest of Kamsa and punched him. And Kamsa was dead. Evil. And then Krishna decided, I will come, Devaki, Vasudev. You had to undergo so much torturous pains for me. I will now come and live with you and be your child. So he lived in the home of Devaki and Vasudev. And what were the first thing that Devaki and Vasudev decided to do with Krishna? Such amazing devotees they were. They understood that Krishna is our children and Balaram is also. So, after all those long years of suffering separation, when they first came, their first decision was to send them to the Gurukul of Sandipani Muni for spiritual training. Because they understood that real love means to enlighten a person in God consciousness, not to just enjoy them. But if I really love my children, I must serve them by giving them an understanding of the goal of life and proper training. So for 1 year, they were away at the ashram of Sandipani Muni, where they learned the scriptures, and they learned all spiritual arts. And then they returned. But before they returned, Sandipani Muni, Krishna and Balaram approached them and said, you have taught us so many wonderful things. You are our Gurudev. You have given us proper training, and it is the duty of a disciple to give dakshin, some charity to the guru. So what can we give you? Sandipani Muni said, just having disciples like you is the fulfillment of all my desires. But if you want to give me something, my son died some years ago. He drowned in the ocean. Bring him back to life and bring him back to me. Adivo. Radhe. You can just leave it down. They want to rest. So, Krishna went in the ocean, and ultimately he went and he brought back the children, the child. So when he went back to the home of Devaki and Vasudev, he lived in Mathura for some time with them. Then they moved to Dwarka. He lived for many, many, many years with them. And one day, when he was intimately, personally sitting with his mother and father, they were praising his glories, and he was reciprocating such love with them. And Krishna asked Devaki, that you have undergone so much terrible suffering for my sake, I want to give you a benediction. What would you like? She didn't want anything from him. She was dissatisfied to serve him. But because she saw that Krishna really wanted to give her a benediction, just to please him, she expressed something that was very deep in her heart. Please listen carefully to this. Everyone is listening? This is very important. What did she ask? As a mother, she said that, Krishna, do you know how much I love those 6 children that were killed right in front of my eyes? I had such love, such an affection for every one of them. And their loss is deeply within my heart. I have heard the wonderful story of how you brought the son of Sandipani Muni back. So I think you have the power to bring my 6 children back too. So Krishna said yes, immediately. And you know what he did? He went down to Sutala Loka, which was presided over by Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj was the king of the Asuras. He was actually the grandson of Prahlad, which also means he was the great-grandson of Hiranyakashipu. Very mysterious family
line he has.
Can you imagine? You know, in India, everyone has pictures of their father, grandfather, great-grandfather. His father was Virochana. His father was Virochana. His grandfather was Prahlad. Such a gentle, humble, pure-hearted saint. And his great-grandfather was the most terrible, blood-sucking Rakshasa demon. Anyways, Bali Maharaj was king of the demons. But by the grace of Vamanadev, he surrendered everything with great humility. And after Vamanadev, after he surrendered everything and Vamanadev took everything away, Atmanivedanam, he gave Bali Maharaj the planet of Sutala to rule over. When Krishna and Balaram went to Sutala Loka, Bali Maharaj was so happy to see. He just bowed down with such love and devotion and washed the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram and sprinkled the water on all his family members. And then he said, "My dear Lord, you are so merciful even to demons like me. I'm a demon. I conquered Indra. I caused so many problems for so many people. But your causeless mercy is, even though we worshipped you with enmity, even my great-grandfather, Hiranyakashipu, he hated you. But by your great mercy, you gave him liberation. I consider we're more fortunate than the demigods. Because even though we fight with you and you take everything away from us, and sometimes you even kill us, you give us liberation. But these demigods, you give them all material facilities and they're just in illusion, trying to enjoy it all. So I really consider that I'm very fortunate that you gave your causeless mercy to me. How can I serve you? I am surrendered to you." Krishna recalled what happened a long time ago. He said, at one time, Lord Brahma, Krishna wanted to show that even great personalities, if they're not very, very careful, they can fall into the illusion of Maya. So Brahma began to chase after his own daughter, just for a few seconds. Then he came to his senses. But at the time, the six sons of the great sage Maricha, they laughed at Lord Brahma. They criticized him and laughed on him. And because of this offense to a great devotee, even though he appeared wrong, still because he was such a great devotee, they had to fall into demoniac births. And those six sons became the six sons of Hiranyakashipu. And they had to live like that. And then they had to take birth as the sons of the demon Kalanemi, who was also killed by Vishnu. And then it was part of their process of purification to become the six sons of Devaki and be killed right after birth. And Bali Maharaj had those little baby children still, keeping them. Krishna said, "Give them back to me." Bali Maharaj gave the six little babies back. They were still babies, I think. It doesn't say whether they were babies still or not, but they were the children. So he brought them back to Devaki. And Devaki, just her mother affection was so great, she just began to weep. And the first thing she did is, with such love, she took each of her children and she gave them the milk from her breast. But what an amazing arrangement Krishna made. Because Krishna had drunk the milk from Devaki's breast. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary of the Bhagavatam that when Krishna appeared in the jail cell of Kamsa in the forearm form of Narayan, he told Vasudev that you take me to Gokul immediately. Then then on Devaki's request, he became a beautiful little baby. Huh? But Devaki, she said, wait a second. She was thinking that it's a long trip to Gokul, and I don't want my child to be hungry during this trip. So just before they left, she gave Krishna the milk from her breast and filled him up nicely, then sent him to Gokul. Because Krishna drank the milk from Devaki, the milk in her breast became Mahaprasad. And when these six children drank that milk, they all became thoroughly liberated souls. They attained the perfection of life by drinking Devaki's milk, which is the prasad of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Their lives became perfect. They attained the highest state of self-realization. Then they bowed before their mother and Krishna, and Krishna sent them back to their heavenly abodes, but not as ordinary heavenly denizens, but of Paramhamsas, acharyas. So what appeared to be a great tragedy and very bewildering ultimately became the greatest benediction. They were liberated. Who can understand the ways of God? Only those who have faith. Only those who have heard from the previous acharyas, who have heard and understood the teachings of the Gita. They know that, yes, this material creation is endlessly mutable, and it is bewildering, and it is very confusing. But for those who simply maintain their faith and devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything is auspicious, and everyone in relationship becomes bestowed with that auspicious benediction. The fact is, if we simply become surrendered at the feet of God, it is the word of God that 10 generations, future and past, of all relatives are liberated. By simply becoming purified in consciousness, by simply becoming a pure lover of God, all bewilderments, all confusions, all the inebrieties of material existence cease to exist, and our life becomes completely abundant with auspiciousness. How it happens? It is by the supreme will of the Lord. And we have seen, time and time again, when we understand the words of Krishna as Arjuna did, when Arjuna simply humbly sat and listened to the word of Krishna with faith and with submissive humility, he understood everything clearly. And he was able to fight the battle of life perfectly. But it is explained in the Bhagavad that some years later, after Krishna left the planet, Arjuna again fell in a state of bewilderment. But simply by remembering the words of the Bhagavad Gita, he again became enlightened, full of power, full of strength, full of purpose, and fulfillment and joy. The words of the Gita, when they are heard from honest and humble devotees, have the power to reveal God within our lives. Krishna Surya Samaya Hoya Andhakar Yahan Krishna Taha Nahi Maya Radhikar. This material existence, which is full of ignorance, is like darkness, but Krishna is like the sun. In the presence of the sun, darkness cannot exist. When we simply remember with a submissive heart the words of the Gita, when we remember the words of our Gurudev, and when we remember the holy name of God, all the darkness, bewilderment, confusion, and miseries of material existence cease to exist. The whole material world is transformed into Vaikuntha when we have that faith, devotion in the remembrance of Krishna. Vaikuntha, that place where there is no anxieties and no miseries, is not simply a matter of transferring your body from one planet to another. Vaikuntha is within the heart of every living being. This world is Vaikuntha to those who remember Krishna. And it is Martyaloka, the planet of death, for those who forget Krishna. But how to remember Krishna? It is not just a sentiment. It is a great science. And the Bhagavad Gita is teaching that science. How to always remember Krishna. In the association of his devotees, where they are discussing his glories and living in his loving service and chanting his names, we could learn the ultimate of all precious gifts, how to live in pure remembrance of the Lord, and how to perform our work in this world in this divine consciousness. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has explained that to associate with sincere-hearted devotees and to chant the holy name in their presence is the most sublime benediction, the supreme most way of purifying our hearts and always remembering Krishna. So let us take advantage. Let us receive and accept with a grateful heart this priceless gift of Harinam Sankirtan. Everyone, please stand up. A translation? I don't see Kardama anywhere. Everyone sit down again, I'm sorry. Sri Kardamaji will translate. Any guests have any questions? Yes.
I want to tell you regarding that man who told everybody that he could save his cancer due to proper dieting and all. But as long as he lived, he has tried to help others. Yeah. He has written a book, yes, that 100 years you can live through dieting, proper dieting and all. But if he dies due to something else, slipping on the road or something, that is not his mistake. As long as he lived, he has tried to guide others properly how to live as per dieting system. That's all I want to say.
We are not saying anything against him. He was obviously a genius as far as health. What we are trying to say, and he was also a very good man. He was very philanthropic. He really wanted to help others. How can we criticize such a nice person as this? He's very pious. But what we are trying to explain is, no matter how expert we are, the nature of this world, the nature of the world is that there is danger at every step for everyone, at all times. Huh? So there, Arivo, that's an exclamation point. But the the real compassion of the great devotees is that they are trying to reveal this truth. Just as proper diet and exercise can make your body very nice, but the body has to die today or tomorrow. By proper diet and exercise, we can also transcend all of the dualities and limitations of material existence and bring our soul back to its natural healthy state. To forget God is a disease for the soul. It is like a cancerous tumor covering our soul, the tumor of greed and lust and pride, which is born of forgetfulness of God. And by taking nice prasad and by chanting the name of God, the exercises, dancing and kirtan, chanting God's name, taking prasad, this is the diet that brings our soul to its natural healthy state, by which we can be transcendental to this world of danger at every step.
We agree with you.
Thank you. Thank you.
My question is, what we have heard is there is something called destiny. Everybody is destined to go through something throughout his life, whether it is good luck, bad luck, happiness or misery. Is there any way that this path through this life that we have, the suffering can be alleviated by prayers and being with Krishna, or you still have to go through the destiny irrespective? For example, Ram had to go through those 14 years, you know?
He didn't have to. He decided it was the best thing.
Yeah, but there was destiny, like everything was destined.
Yes.
Even Krishna's life on this earth was destined. He also went through good and bad phases. Like,
of course, Krishna and Ram, they are Swayam Bhagavan. Maya Dikshina Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. They are the controllers of all time and controllers of the entire material nature. When they come down and appear to be destined to certain events, it is their lila. It is their will. They are enacting these wonderful pastimes to attract our hearts and our minds. But for us, it is not lila. For us, it is simply what we have to go through. Lila means it's by your will. But when you're forced by your previous karma, then we are talking about material destiny. Now, the Shastras say that all of your previous activities and all your previous desires of all your previous lives have all accumulated to create a particular destiny. We have done good, we have done bad. And according to the balance, we have to accept the reactions of all of our past deeds. And sometimes there's happiness, sometimes there's distress, sometimes there's crisis, sometimes there's the relief of crisis. We have made our own destiny. God has given us the freedom to act. Now, some people have done evil in the past, but they're doing good now. That means soon all those bad reactions will be exhausted, and in the future all the good benedictions will come before us. And some people have done really good in the past and they're evil now. Right now they're enjoying like anything, but soon that will be exhausted, and then they're going to have to face the consequences of what they're doing now. That is the nature of karma. That is the nature of destiny. But Krishna explains, Mahatmanastu mam parata daivim prakriti mashrata, that those souls who become my honest and sincere devotees, they are no longer under the control of material energy. They come under the control of the spiritual energy. Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masaja. Krishna says, if you surrender to me, I relieve you of all sinful reactions. Nothing to fear. Now, when we become devotees of the Lord, it is like pulling out the plug of a fan. Still, the fan continues to move. Although we're not producing any new karma, still the effects of previous karma will go on for some time. And you may say that's destiny that we have created in the past, but if we simply continue to live through that situation with faith and devotion to God and not create any new materialistic karma by our faith and devotion in God, then very quickly we are liberated from all of this material destiny and we attain paramgati, the supreme destination. Destiny means toward a destination, which is transcendental consciousness, which is within us. And sometimes even pure devotees, they go through, by the arrangement of God, what was their destiny, sometimes disease and failures and everything else, but they're transcendental to it, like a lotus flower in a dirty pond of water, is unaffected. The Gita and all the great scriptures of the world tells us we should try to make this world the best place we can, where there's the best facility for spiritualization. But ultimately, it's a place of death. Ultimately, the real purpose of this world is to arrange within our families, within our homes, within our own lives, within our society, a spiritual culture by which we can be as prosperous as possible here, but simultaneously be elevating our consciousness so that when the destiny of misery and death comes, we are above it and beyond it. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
So destiny may be, but Krishna consciousness or Sanatan Dharma means to become transcendental to that material destiny, like a lotus flower. We were explaining the other day at Mr. Chabria's house that sometimes the pond of water, when the storms are there, they become muddy and dirty and polluted. And sometimes the pond of water is crystal clear. But the lotus flower remains unaffected in both. The soul is like that lotus flower. Self-realization means to become transcendental to the destinies of this world and to be fixed in pure loving service to the Lord under all circumstances. One more question?
Maharaj, we now know for certain that this material body is destructible, while the soul, being eternal, is not so. And when it leaves the body, while the body remains with us, the soul goes out of the body. Now, are there any scriptures throwing light on the fact, what is the trajectory of the soul that has left the body? What is the trajectory, what is the path it has to travel before it takes another body of whatever species? Because there's a missing link between leaving one body and taking another body.
This is what you're speaking of, is karma.
What is the trajectory of that
principle
soul?
The principle is, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. There are 8,400,000 species of life. Each one is unique to provide a reaction to particular types of karma of the past. And at the time of death, the accumulated consciousness of your whole life appears as a last thought, beyond your control. And according to the last thought, the soul can go to any of those 8,400,000 species of life in the human birth. The animal species, it is explained in the Shastra, through the animals, the soul evolves from one species to the next, to the next, to the next. from the vegetables, trees, it goes through all those species, through the aquatics, into the insects, through all the species of birds, through the mammals, ultimately from cow, tiger, elephant, and other such advanced conscious beasts, it enters into the human species. At the human species, it's the junction. You can go down to the bottom, you can go up to the top, you can become liberated, anything according to your karma. There's 8,400,000 species of you can say residences, which you could qualify yourself to accept. But the purpose of the Gita is in this human form of life. We shouldn't be concerned with anything except self-realization, which means developing our consciousness. The gift of human life is we have the right to elevate our consciousness beyond birth and death forever. To enter into the loving relationship with God, who is present within our hearts and within his holy name. By associating with saintly people, by living a pure life, and by sincerely and attentively taking shelter of his name, we can transcend birth and death forever. And we can awaken. We are not even concerned with transcending birth and death. What we're really concerned with is awakening that sentiment of pure love and devotion for the Lord. Because that ecstasy, that ananda, that pleasure of pure love is so great that all of the conditions of this world are insignificant in comparison. And to share that love, which is dormant within our heart, is the greatest gift, the greatest charity, the greatest service we can render to humanity. And this is manifesting through the holy name if we simply accept. This is the gift of God in Kali Yuga, his holy name. So now everyone, please, let us chant the holy name.